Welcome to the Reality Revolution. I'm your host, Brian Scott. It's lovely to return to Dr. Joseph Murphy, and this is a unique teaching where he goes over the 23rd Psalm. This is not really a biblical teaching. Don't look at it like that. Remember, Dr. Joseph Murphy is probably the best at creating affirmations, and a lot of his inspiration came from the Psalms. The Psalms are like magic spells written into the Bible. You don't even need to believe anything in the Bible. If you read the Psalms, they have a certain psychological and occult effect, in my opinion. People that read certain Psalms, you can use it to allay your fears and a number of other things. In this one, he does focus on the 23rd Psalm, one of the most popular Psalms in the Bible, and some of the wisdom that goes about meditating and creating your reality is fantastic. This comes from his book, Maximize Your Potential Through the Power of Your Subconscious Mind to Overcome Fear and Worry. The inner meaning of the 23rd Psalm. The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He maketh me to lie down in green pastures. He leadeth me beside the still waters. He restoreth my soul. He leadeth me in the paths of righteousness for his name's sake. Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for thou art with me. Thy rod and thy staff, they comfort me. Thou preparest a table before me in the presence of mine enemies. Thou anointest my head with oil. My cup runneth over. Surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. This is the 23rd Psalm. This is probably the most frequently repeated psalm from the Judeo-Christian Bible. Many people of all faiths meditate on the great truths of this psalm. They get marvelous results. As you focus your attention on these truths, absorbing them into your mentality, you are meditating in the true sense of the word, because you are appropriating more of your divinity, the divine presence that dwells in the deep cell of all people. Meditation determines your destiny. We're always meditating. Your thoughts and feelings control your destiny. Meditation is as real and as natural as digestion, assimilation, and breathing. In Las Vegas, I met a woman who suffered from shock. She had lost her voice. The doctors could find no infection, no affliction of any kind in examining the throat and the vocal organs. At my suggestion, she began to practice what I call real meditation. Her son was coming home from Vietnam in a few weeks, and she sat still and quiet and imagined that she was embracing him and welcoming him home, saying all the things a mother would say. She did this for about 10 minutes, two or three times a day. She gave attention to a selected goal, an objective. At the end of 2 weeks, her son came home, knocked at the door, and she welcomed him. She began to talk naturally. That's real meditation. She gave attention to her voice. She gave attention to the fact that she was talking, to the fact that she was welcoming him. It was a mental and spiritual drama taking place in her own mind. The Lord is my shepherd. The Lord means God, the living Spirit Almighty, in particular your awareness and knowledge of this infinite presence and power within you. The shepherd takes care of the sheep, and the divine power will take care of you. As you turn to the indwelling presence, its nature is to respond to you. You are told, I shall not want. This means you will never want for evidence of the fact that you have chosen God as your shepherd. Shepherds watch over their sheep. They love them and care for them. They examine the field where they graze and eradicate loco weed, which would adversely affect the sheep. They led them to the shade and guide them single file over the steep ravine to water, where they are refreshed. At night, they examine their nostrils to see if there are any other needles or other irritants embedded therein. If so, they pluck them out and pour some soothing oil upon them. They examine their feet also, and if injured, they administer kindly to them with whatever meditation or treatment is appropriate. Shepherds love their sheep. All this is symbolic, of course, and very significant, indicating to all of us that if we choose God as our shepherd, and God is the living spirit within you, the supreme intelligence, the life principle. We will not want for any good thing if we choose the supreme intelligence as our guide and counselor. Before we get an answer to our prayer, we must first possess our desire in consciousness. We must establish the mental equivalent. We do this by thinking of what we want with interest and feeling and give it our attention. Gradually, by osmosis, it sinks into our subconscious mind and becomes a conviction. Our consciousness represents the sum total of our acceptances and beliefs, both conscious and subconscious. Our state of consciousness is the way we think, feel, and believe, and to whatever we give mental consent. That's the only presence, power, cause, and substance in your world. When you discover that you have discovered God within you, in other words, our desire must be deposited in our subconscious mind. We must be before we can have. The ancient Hebrews said, "To be is to have." If I try to obtain what I want by external means, the Bible tells you I am a thief and a robber. My state of consciousness is the door to all expression. That's the way you think, feel, and believe. It is done unto you as you believe the way you believe. I must possess the mental equivalent of whatever I want to be or possess in this world. Let us take a simple illustration. You want to be healed and you affirm over and over again, "I am healed." These mechanical statements are not enough. You must enter into the joy of feeling that you are healed. You must realize there is an infinite healing presence which created you from a cell. It knows all the processes and functions of your body. It heals a cut in your finger, reduces the edema of a burn. It restores you. The tendency of all life is to heal. It must be a conviction based upon the silent inner knowing of the soul. To be wealthy, you must assume the feeling of being wealthy and realize that God or spirit within you is the source of the entire world, the source of the hair on your head, the source of the bread on your table, the shoes that you wear, the ground you walk on, the air that you breathe, the source of the sunshine, and the source of the stars that come nightly to the sky. Then wealth will follow based upon your knowledge, awareness, feeling, and understanding. The sheep are the noble, dignified, godlike ideas that bless us. Our conviction of good is the shepherd that watches over the sheep. Our dominant state of mind always rules in the same manner as a general commands the army. We call our sheep by name when we enter into the consciousness of them having being or doing the thing we long to have, to be, or to do. If we sustain these moods, they gel and crystallize within us, and these subjective embodiments become objectified manifestations. The sheep will not follow strangers, but will flee from them, for they do not know the voice of the strangers. The strangers are the thoughts of fear, doubt, condemnation, jealousy, envy, or anxiety that enters the mind. These ideas delay our healing or prosperity and postpone our demonstration because these thoughts are the voices of strangers. For example, if there were 20,000 sheep in a corral and there were 10 shepherds and they came in the morning to lead the sheep out, they would say, "Follow me." All the sheep of that shepherd knew his voice and they would follow him. But if a stranger said, "Follow me," there would be no response. This simply means when you have the mood or the feeling of being what you long to be, and you know there is an almighty power backing you up, moving in your behalf, then that ideal that you want to bring to pass will come to pass and the light will shine upon your ways. It is idle to pray that the infinite healing presence is making you whole and perfect, and at the same time be resentful or fearful that you cannot be healed. If you believed that circumstances, conditions, age, events, race, lack of money can preclude the possibility of attaining your objective, you are in biblical language a thief and a robber, because you are robbing yourself of the joy of the answered prayer. There is nothing to oppose the infinite, and the infinite spirit gave you the desire. The desire is good. Therefore, you say that infinite spirit gave you this desire. It doesn't mock me. It will reveal the perfect plan for its development in divine law and order. The seed you deposit in the ground has its own mathematics and mechanics in it. The oak is the realized potential of the acorn. But you must first deposit the acorn in the soil. And the seed is faith because you understand the divine law. And the seed is your desire. A new invention, a new book, or a desire to become greater than you are. All that ever came before me, the Bible says, the conviction are thieves and robbers. You must believe that you now are what you long to be. To believe is to live in the state of being it, to be alive to the truths. To accept something as true is belief. Millions believe that which is false. Many people meditate. In India, for example, they give you a word to repeat over and over and over again. Doing this quiets the mind and concentrates your thoughts. Various people to accomplish this use Sanskrit words like Om, Aim, or Shareem. You may prefer to use a word more meaningful to you, such as insight, peace, love, or I am. Any word or phrase will do, even a word like Coca-Cola, if repeated over and over, will help create a quiet mind. Your blood pressure will drop, your pulse will become normal, and all that. But such words will not help you grow in a spiritual way. You could grow spiritually by repeating, "Divine love fills my soul," or "God's peace fills my mind." You must know what you are doing. To say an idle word and not know the meaning of it doesn't accomplish very much. Meditation comes from med, which means the middle, the medium between the idea and its manifestation. Medicus is an old term for doctor because doctors were looked upon as the medium between the disease and health. Everybody meditates. Some people meditate on negative things such as financial losses, the blowout on the lonely road, ill health, or bad decisions they had made. That is meditation of a very negative nature, and because you are giving those thoughts your full attention and devotion, they sink into your subconscious mind, and you magnify them, and you bring all these things to pass in your own life. Meditate on whatever things are true, lovely, noble, and godlike. To meditate is to eat all these truths, to cogitate, to give your attention to something, to focus on something. They asked Newton how he accomplished great things. He said, "I intend my mind in a certain direction." In other words, he focused on a solution, the way out, the happy ending. To cogitate, to meditate, to focus your attention upon, to get interested in something, get absorbed in something. You are told that meditation is for the purpose of redirecting your mind along God-like ways so that divine law and order may govern all of your activities in all the phases of your life. There is nothing mysterious about meditation. You are always meditating, perhaps not always constructively. Shakespeare said, "All things be ready if the mind be so." The Bible says the works were finished from the foundation of the world. All this means is that we should open our minds and hearts and accept the gifts of God proffered to us from the foundations of time. Surely, you don't pray for sunshine or air or water. The ocean doesn't care whether you go to it with a thimble full or a demijohn or a barrel. There's always the same amount of water in the world. We should reorder our minds and ask ourselves the simple question, how is it in God and heaven? Heaven is the infinite intelligence in which you live and move and have your being. God is spirit, and that spirit is in you. The answer to that is all is bliss, harmony, joy, love, peace, perfection, and all this indescribable beauty. That's the reality of you. The all-wise one, the all-powerful one, the all-knowing one within you. No matter what you seek already is. Why wait for love? God's love is within you. Say that. Say, "God's love fills my soul." Peace is. You don't wait for it, do you? God's peace fills my soul. The joy of the Lord is your strength. Power is. The almighty power is within you. It's timeless and spaceless. Harmony is. God is. Absolute harmony. The harmony of God is in your mind, in your body. The answer to every problem is within you now, for God is the timeless, spaceless being within you, that living spirit almighty. It only knows the answer, no matter what you seek already is. Why wait for it? If you say, someday I'll be happy, the world won't give you happiness. You give it to yourself. If you are seeking guidance, affirm, infinite intelligence knows the answer, the way out. Even before I ask, as I call on the Supreme Wisdom, I know its nature is to respond to me. I will clearly recognize the lead, the answer when it comes. I know it comes clearly into my conscious, reasoning mind, and I recognize it instantaneously. It's impossible for me to miss it. Having done this, dismiss it from your mind, knowing that you turned your request over to the infinite intelligence in your subconscious. And inevitably the answer will come. You know when you have really turned it over, because your mind is at peace, and you don't subsequently deny what you have already affirmed and decreed. He maketh me to lie down in green pastures. I'm writing this chapter in a book in Laguna Hills, California. A letter arrived in the mail yesterday from a woman in Hawaii telling me that she meditated on these words, He maketh me to lie down in green pastures, for about a half an hour, three times a day. For a week, she focused all her attention on this promise of the psalm. She began to look at it from all angles, its inner meaning and how it applied to her. She stated that in her meditative mood and on her reflection of these words, the phrase meant peace of mind, contentment, tranquility, abundance, and security. The vision of a cow lying down in the field chewing the cud came clearly into her mind, symbolizing the meditative process of her own mind. In chewing the cud, the cow is absorbing, digesting, and transforming everything eaten into milk, tissue, bone, muscle, blood, and so forth. Likewise, she was digesting, ingesting, and absorbing these truths until they too became a part of her. So as the cow chews on the clover, it goes from one stomach to another and then comes up again into the mouth of the cow, and it chews it again and again to a fine consistency, and lo and behold, we have milk. That's meditation. The ancients said, you can eat the cow because it chews the cud and divides the hoof. It's clean unto you. Dividing the hoof is getting a clear understanding of what the truths of God are, separating your mind from that which is false. Knowing, therefore, that what the truth is, then you absorb, digest, give your attention and devotion to these truths. Then you are chewing the cud, and these become a part of you like an apple becomes your bloodstream. That's meditation. It's practical. It's down to earth. This woman's finances were in bad shape. She was in danger of losing her lovely home. The mine in which she had invested a large part of her money suddenly collapsed. Her son was missing. No one could find him. As she continued to meditate, at the end of a week, she received notice from an attorney that a large sum of money had been bequeathed to her by a distant relative on another island, the Big Island of Hawaii. This solved her financial problem, and she was able to make satisfactory arrangements with all concerned. Her son returned home. He had run away to Canada thinking there were greener pastures there. He was wiser on his return and established peace within him. This was real meditation of a very constructive nature. She appropriated mentally these great truths, and they became a living part of her, the same way that a banana, when eaten, or a piece of bread, becomes a part of your bloodstream. She quietly devoted her mind to a certain passage of the psalm and dwelled on the profundity of its meaning and its healing power. She decided to lie down mentally with these truths and experience all-around harmony in her life. He leadeth me beside the still waters. The shepherd in the Bible is a symbol of the guiding, healing, protective power of the divine presence within you. You are a good shepherd when you know and believe that God or the supreme intelligence is the only presence and power, cause and substance within you. This is the power that enables you to walk and lift a chair. It's an unseen power. When this conviction is enthroned in your mind, you will be divinely directed and blessed in countless ways, because the nature of infinite intelligence is responsiveness. Call upon me. I will answer you. I'll be with you in trouble. I will set you on high because you have known my name. Name means the nature, the way it responds to you. The still waters represent the mind full of peace, poise, serenity, and equanimity. You are contemplating the power, the wisdom, and the love of the infinite. In doing so, you find yourself immersed in the holy omnipresence, bathed by the river of peace, joy, wholeness, and vitality. When your mind is at peace, the answer comes. You meditate, you know, you can eat mentally, you can digest and absorb these certain ideas. Peace is the power at the heart of God. He restoreth my soul. When you choose God or the Supreme Intelligence as your shepherd, you will sing the songs of triumph. Or to put it in Emerson's words, your mental attitude will be the soliloquy of the loving and beholding soul. For prayer is the contemplation of the truths of God from the highest standpoint. You are recognizing the infinite spirit within you. And you know there will be a response when you call upon it. It's impersonal, no respecter of persons. It responds to the atheist, the agnostic. It responds to everybody. Call upon it, and it answers you. It's no respecter of persons. It knows nothing about Islam, Judaism, Christianity, Buddhism, Shintoism, or any specific creed. God is no respecter of persons. Love belongs to all. The law is always impersonal. That applies to any law. Furthermore, you recognize the power is one and indivisible. As you do this, you reject all fear and false beliefs of the world. Whatever fears, frustrations, false beliefs were deposited in, your subconscious mind can be obliterated and expunged. Because you are claiming boldly that the infinite ocean of life, love, truth, and beauty are saturating your subconscious mind, cleansing, healing, and transforming your whole being into the divine pattern of harmony, wholeness, and peace. It is somewhat similar to pouring distilled water into a bottle of dirty, filthy water. After a while, the moment comes when the last drop of dirty water is removed. That's called prayer. Filling your mind with the truths of God, and you crowd out your mind everything unlike God. Once you acknowledge the supremacy of the supreme healing power and the creative power of your own thought, you have the Lord as your shepherd, and you have restored your soul. He leadeth me in the paths of righteousness for his name's sake. Go within. Close your eyes. Become still and quiet, and gently affirm that the wisdom of God anoints your intellect and is always a lamp unto your feet. It's always a light upon your path. Claim that divine love goes before your making straight, happy, joyous, and prosperous your way. Look to the infinite presence at all times and think, speak, act, and react from the standpoint of the divine center within you. Realize, know, feel, and claim that infinite spirit is your guide, your counselor, your boss, your senior partner, and that divine right action governs you at all times. Affirm boldly, from now on, I think right, because I think from the standpoint of eternal verities and principles of life. I feel right, I do right, I act right, and everything I do is in accordance with the eternal principles of divine law and order, heaven's first law. I know that the name of the infinite means the nature of the infinite, which refers to the fact that the God presence is the ever-living one, the all-powerful one, the all-knowing one, the self-renewing one, the boundless one, and he is omnipresent, omniscient, and is also the omni-action of the infinite. You know that the infinite and his love saturate your whole being. Whatever you do will prosper. Realize that the infinite is within you. It's called the ever-living one, the all-wise one, the all-knowing one, the self-renewing one, the one alone who lives in the hearts of all people. It is older than night or day, younger than the babe, newborn, brighter than light, darker than dark, beyond all things and creatures, yet fixed in the hearts of everyone. And from it, the shining worlds flow forth. The whole world comes forth from the one presence and one power. It is you. You came forth from the infinite. Also, the whole world is a creation of the infinite. In the Upanishads, the mystic teachings of the Hindus, it says God thinks and worlds appear. The whole world, modern science says, is a thought of the one, the beautiful, and the good. The whole world is also mathematically ordered by a supreme intelligence, so scientists can tell the return of the Halley's Comet to a split second. It is a divinely ordered universe, so that the astronauts, before they left the Earth, could calculate mathematically that they could walk out in space. And of course they could. They had faith, not in a human or a corporeal personality or creed or dogma or a church, not at all. They had faith in the creative laws of mind and principles that never change. It is the same yesterday, today, and forever. Engineers have faith in the principles of mathematics. When they build bridges, they conform to universal principles of stress and strain, the curvature of the earth, and all these things. They calculate the whole thing mathematically. Navigators flying through the Pacific may not know where they are, but by shooting the stars, they calculate the location and latitude and longitude. Likewise, when you are lost or confused, you can shoot that great star within you. The I Am, the presence of God, the Om of India. It's the living spirit, almighty contact that. It's all wise. It created the whole world. Realize infinite intelligence knows the answer, guides and directs you and leads you and reveals to you the answer, for it knows only the answer. This is why you read. Before you call, I will answer. Before you call, the answer is there, waiting for you, for the infinite will do nothing for you except through you. The infinite works on a cosmic scale, and you are an individual. You are free to choose. You have volition, choice, initiative. You have the freedom to become a cutthroat or a holy person. You are not compelled to be good, not compelled to be honest, not compelled to express love. You are not compelled to be successful, not like an animal governed by instinct. You have freedom of choice. You can choose from the kingdom of God within you. You can choose harmony. You can choose right action, which is the principle of life. You can choose beauty, love, inspiration, abundance, and security. You can choose from the infinite resources within you, from that infinite presence and power which is all wise and knows all. You have volition and choice and initiative. Your state of consciousness is the only God you'll ever know. Your state of consciousness is the way you think, feel, believe, and what you give mental consent to. There is no other cause or power or substance in this world. Therefore, if you are wise, you'll begin to believe in the goodness of God, in the land of the living, in the guidance of God, the harmony of God, the love of God. And you realize that your sheep are the lovely, noble, godlike states you wish to embody. And they will follow you as you begin to feel that you now are what you long to be, that you are now doing what you love to do. If you are a singer, you are now a great singer, and God is singing in majestic cadences through you. As you continue, God in the midst of you will bring it to pass. Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for thou art with me. And of course, you know thy rod and thy staff, they comfort me. Wherever you go, walk the earth with the awareness of peace, love, and goodwill to all. Supposing you go into a hospital to see a sick friend, and you are taking with you the mood of love, peace, and goodwill. Well, that's a wonderful way to visit a sick person. Your mental and spiritual atmosphere will bless the sick person. And when you pray for a sick person, never identify with symptoms, pains, aches, or corporeal conditions. Realize that the presence of God is where the sick person is, and you realize the vitality, the wholeness, and the perfection of the infinite are now being made manifest to the loved one. Then you see the loved one as the loved one ought to be. The person should be home. You don't see that person in the hospital sick, wan, or weak. You are fastening that sickness on the person. You are also creating it in your own mind. It doesn't make any sense. If you're praying for wholeness, vitality, and perfection, peace and harmony, and for the miraculous healing power to flow through the person, visualize that person home, vital, and alive. Your image must agree with your affirmation. This is why so many people do not know how to pray. This is why many do more harm than good, because they are identifying with the sickness, condition, tumor, or whatever it might be. Or they look at the chart and they say, it's terrible, he hasn't got a chance, and so forth. There's no way to pray. Your mental and spiritual atmosphere can bless the person if you have the right attitude. give that person a transfusion of grace and love, power and wisdom, thereby nourishing him or her with confidence and a belief in the infinite healing presence. God is life. That is your life now. Do that whenever you visit a hospital or a sick person. Give that person a transfusion of life and love and beauty. God is life, and that is your life now. Life cannot die. That would be absurd, so why talk about death? There is no death. It's a shadow. A shadow has no reality. How could life die? In other words, how could God die? God was never born, will never die. Water wets it not. Fire burns it not. Wind blows it not away. It has no beginning or end. It is the life principle within you. Now, in the name of heaven, could life become death? It's absurd. So-called death is an entry into the fourth dimension of life, and you go there every night when people in their gross ignorance call you dead. You go there every night in your life. That's where you go when you are called dead. Your journey is from glory to glory, from wisdom to wisdom, ever onward, upward, and Godward. There is no death. If a light bulb goes out, do you say, that's the end of electricity? Or do you insert another bulb? Electricity is. It was here before Jesus, Moses, Elijah, Muhammad, or Buddha walked the earth. So the idea, the principle of radio or television or submarines or airplanes, they could have used these things, but the idea didn't come to them. They didn't think it was possible. They were human like all of us. They were born like all of us. And maybe that some appropriated more divinity than others. They were all born like all of us, for all humans are children of God. What else could they be? There's only one life, one spirit. We are all children of the one. That's why all religions of the world say our Father. We have a common progenitor, the life principle. That's why when you radiate love, peace, and goodwill to another, you are selfish because you are blessing yourself. When you hurt another, you hurt yourself. Subjectively, we are all one. Objectively, we seem to be somewhat different, just like the various countries in the world. Above the ocean, they all seem to be different. Underneath, there is a unitary wholeness. They are all connected deep down in the ocean. Likewise, subjectively, we are all one. To hurt another is to hurt yourself. To bless another is to bless yourself. When you radiate love, peace, and goodwill to all those who are working and to all those people in this country and every other country, you are selfish because you are blessing yourself. There is no end to the glory that is humankind. The journey of your loved one is ever onward, upward, and Godward. You can't be less tomorrow than you are today. Life goes not backward nor tarries with yesterday. Tell me honestly, if someone is lost up in the air, do you go up in the air and say, this is where he was born, or this is where he passed on? No, you don't. Likewise, if many people were lost in an ocean catastrophe, do you go out in the ocean and say, this is where they were born, or this is where they died, with some little sign? All these things are lies. All graves are lies. Because there is no one who died any place. There's no one buried any place. Do you think that Eisenhower is buried someplace or President Kennedy? That's absurd. No one is buried any place. There are no graveyards except the graveyards you make in your own mind. The earthly remains may be interred, but the real person lives on. If something happens to the piano, it is burned up. Is that the end of music? Music just is. It transcends all instruments. You have bodies to infinity. You'll never be without a body. You have a body now. That's why the wise and spiritually illumined person today never visits a graveyard, because there's no one there. They asked of Socrates, Master, where will they bury you? He looked at them and laughed, and he said, bury me any place if you can catch me. How could you bury someone any place? That's too stupid for words. You have bodies to infinity, a fourth dimensional body. You'll never be without a body. You couldn't be. You have it now, and the body undergoes dissolution. It becomes grass, hail, and snow, but there is no one buried any place. To go there to a grave is to identify with lack, limitation, cessation, and misery, and you create graveyards in your own mind and bring all manner of disease. Never do it. Give the love in your heart to your loved ones. They are right where you are. They are around you, separated by frequency only. In other words, wake up. You have another body. You have it now. It's rarefied and attenuated, enabling you to pass through solid matter. You will meet your loved ones. You will grow in wisdom, truth, and beauty. The little child whose life was snuffed out in the womb still grows and expands as a grace note in the grand symphony of all creation. It will be a beautiful girl or boy when you meet in the next dimension, for life is growth. Life is newness, expansion. Actually, you go there every night, as I said, when you go to sleep. If, for example, you're afraid of death or afterlife or of judgment day and things of that nature, then you are being governed by ignorance and delusion and by false beliefs of all kinds. For God has not given us the spirit of fear, but of power and of love and of a sound mind. Death in biblical language is ignorance of the truth. That's the only death there is. We die only to the false beliefs, the illusions of the world, to the creeds and dogmas of the world, to the fears and the false beliefs of the world. Every prayer is a death. You must die to what you are before you can live to what you long to be. You must die to the belief in poverty and resurrect a God of opulence in your own mind. Death in biblical language is ignorance of the truth of God. Ignorance is the only sin, and all the misery suffering in this world is the result of ignorance. Buddha discovered that thousands of years ago. He asked Brahma the cause of all suffering and misery in the world, and Brahma, which means God, answered him, ignorance. Teach the people the truth and set them free. That's the answer he got, and that was 5,000 years BC. Thy rod and thy staff, they comfort me. The rod, they asked Moses, what do you have in your hand? He said, the rod. And he threw it on the ground, and it became a serpent, crawling. Do you crawl on the ground? Do you resurrect the divinity within you? Do you realize one with God is a majority? Do you realize that you can think of an infinite now? It moves on your behalf. Or do you crawl along the ground governed by your five senses? You catch it by its tail, you know. Moses smote the rock, and lo and behold, the water came forth. Then that rod swallowed up all the false rods of the Egyptians. The rod is the power of God, the wisdom of God. When you touch that power, call upon it. It responds to you in all the rods of the Egyptians, meaning ignorance, fear, and false beliefs are swallowed up. So the staff represents your authority and ability to use it, to meditate and think about the omnipotence and omniscience of the infinite presence. It brings your mind to an inner state of quietude and passivity. Think of a beautiful quiet lake on a mountaintop and how it reflects the heavenly light, such as the stars and the moon. Likewise, when your mind is still and quiet, you will reflect that heavenly truth and light of God. The quiet mind gets things done. When your mind is still, quiet, and receptive, the divine idea or solution to your problem rises to your surface mind. That is the guidance and intuitive voice of the infinite presence and power. When the lake in the mountain is disturbed, it doesn't reflect the lights of the heaven above. When your mind is quiet, the answer comes. A quiet mind gets things done. Claim that infinite intelligence is guiding you now and give thanks for the joy of the answered prayer. His rod and staff will comfort you, because there is no peace except you understand where the power is. The power is omnipotent. There is nothing to oppose it. How could you have peace except you have discovered the power? Peace comes on the heel of your discovery of the infinite presence and power. There is nothing in the world to oppose it. It's omnipotent, all-powerful. Otherwise, works have no meaning. There is no power in the stars, suns, moons, voodoo, or anything of that nature. That is all based on ignorance, because a scientific thinker doesn't give power to the created thing or phenomenalistic world. He gives power to the Creator. Thou preparest a table before me in the presence of mine enemies. The enemies are your own thoughts, your fears, your self-condemnation, your jealousy, your envy, your doubts, your anger, resentment, and ill will. These are real enemies, but they are in your own mind. When fear thoughts come to your mind, supplant them with faith in God and all things good. When prone to engage in some criticism, self-condemnation, the most destructive of all mental poisons, supplant these thoughts immediately with this great truth. I exalt God in the midst of me, mighty to heal. A young lady was making false allegations against her uncle, hoping to break a will so she could get some of the money bequeathed to him. He was angry and fighting the matter in his mind, making a nervous wreck of himself. However, when he saw what he was doing, he ceased fighting the matter in his mind and began to feed himself spiritually with the great truths of the infinite, which of course is meditation. Meditation is simply to ponder upon, to consider with purpose, to get interested in, to get fascinated in, absorbed in a certain truth so it becomes a part of you. That's all it means. There's nothing mysterious about it. He began to think of the great truths of the infinite. He contemplated peace, harmony, divine right action. There's a principle of right action. There is no principle of wrong action in the world. He realized there was a divine, harmonious solution. He stopped giving power to her. She had no power. She was full of greed and avarice and full of false beliefs. Of course, the whole thing was dissolved and the judge dismissed it. He realized that an infinite law of justice, truth, love, and harmony reigned. A medical doctor, a close friend of mine, said to me recently, the publicity given to the wives of two prominent politicians in Washington who had developed cancer of the breast caused a great fear. Numbers of women flocked to him to test to see if they too had cancer. He added, he felt that fighting cancer, tuberculosis, heart disease, and so forth through propaganda on the screen, radio, and print does more harm than good, because what we fight in our mind, we magnify. You fight nothing. He pointed out that the constant fear of cancer on the part of these women would ultimately create precisely the thing they fear. Think instead of love, harmony, health, peace, and right action. Walk in the consciousness of God's love, peace, wholeness, and perfection. You will automatically rise above these false beliefs, fears, and propaganda of the mass mind. There is a prayer used in India by many people which the young boy in a spiritually oriented family is taught. I'm all health. Brahma is my health. Brahma is a Hindu word for God. As the young boy sings this to himself many times a day, it becomes a habit. As he is impressionable and malleable, he gradually builds up immunity to all sickness and disease. Instead of being taught that the night air gives him pneumonia, that God is going to punish him, he is a bad boy and he's going to get the measles and the whooping cough, he'll never amount to anything. That's what some kids are taught today. They're like little animals. Your children grow in the imagery and likeness of the dominant mental climate of the home. Teach them the golden rule and the law of love. Teach them to respect the divinity within themselves and to respect the policeman and the teacher, and they'll respect their father and mother too. Realize there is nothing in God's universe to fear. Cease giving power to the created thing. Stop being ignorant. Give power to the Creator. The whole universe is for you. Nothing is against you. Thou anointest my head with oil. Oil is symbol of light, healing, praise, and thanksgiving. This means that the infinite healing presence is now functioning in your behalf, and the wisdom of God anoints your intellect. You're consecrated with divine love. You have put gladness in your heart. God has anointed you with the oil of gladness. One of the most wonderful ways to get an answer to your prayer is to imagine you are addressing the infinite in the silence of your soul. Lull yourself to sleep with the words, "Thank you, Father," over and over again until you get the feeling of thankfulness. You don't change the infinite by begging, beseeching, by prayer, or by anything. But when you enter into the mood of thankfulness, you are rising high in your mind to the point of acceptance, and the good things of life begin to flow to you. You are thanking the infinite for the answer to your prayer. As you do this, you carry a thankful attitude to the deep of yourself, to the point of acceptance. You don't create harmony, peace, love, or beauty. You don't create anything. All these things are, and God never changes. God doesn't change himself because you are a Catholic, Protestant, Jew, Muslim, or Hindu, or because you belong to some religion or denomination. That is utter nonsense. You rise to the point of what's true of God. As you claim that and believe it, then your prayer is answered. But you don't change God by your prayer. That's superstition and gross ignorance. My cup runneth over. The cup is a symbol of your heart, which by contemplation you can fill with the great truths of God. As you contemplate the beauty, the glory, and the wonders of the infinite, you will automatically generate a feeling of love, of peace and joy, which fills your heart with ecstasy and rapture. You're able to pass that cup. You're able to say to others, "Drink ye all of this. Drink of love, of wisdom, power, and beauty. How can you drink of it except you have it? You can't give what you don't have. The cup is your heart. It's not a fancy teacup or some antique vessel in the British Museum. This is metaphoric. It's a mystical cup. It belongs to all of us. You will find yourself exuding vibrancy, cordiality, geniality, and goodwill to all as you fill your soul with love. Your subconscious magnifies exceedingly what you deposit in it. Therefore, you find your good is pressed down, shaken together, and running over with the fragrance of the infinite. You will find that God's love has completely dissolved everything negative in your subconscious, and you are as free as the wind. And goodness and mercy will follow you all the days of your life because you dwell in the house of the Lord forever. As you continue to meditate and absorb these truths, you will discover that all things are working together for good. Divine love goes before you, making happy and joyous your way. The harmony, peace, and joy of the Lord flow into your life, and you find yourself expressing your talents at the highest possible level. You will discover that you become what you contemplate. When meditating on the truths of God, you will find that all your ways are pleasantness and all your thoughts are peace. I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. You are a temple of the living God now. You are dwelling in God now. You are dwelling in heaven now. For heaven is the infinite intelligence in which you live and move and have your being. A kid of 7 can understand that. God dwells within you and walks and talks in you. You dwell in the house, which is your own mind. When you regularly and systematically remind yourself many times a day that the infinite spirit is your guide, your counselor, that you are being constantly inspired from on high, then you inhabit it. You look upon God as your Father, your source of supply. You know that you will never want for any good thing in life because He loves you and cares for you. The tabernacle of God is with humankind. He will dwell with them. They shall be with His people, and God Himself shall be with them and be their God. You are now rooted in the divine. You are at home with God. He gives you rest and security. You are relaxed, at peace, completely free from fear for where you are. God is, and you dwell with God forever. You're on a journey on the celestial ladder that knows no end. Every night of your life, you go to sleep with the praise of God forever on your lips, and your journey is ever onward and upward, and Godward, from glory to glory, from octave to octave, from wisdom to wisdom, from power to power, from beauty to beauty, for there is no end to the glory which is yours now and forevermore. In a nutshell, meditation determines your destiny. We're always meditating. Your thoughts and feelings control your destiny. Meditation is as real and as natural as digestion, assimilation, and breathing. God is the living spirit within you, the supreme intelligence, the life principle. We will not want for any good thing if we choose the supreme intelligence as our guide and counselor. Meditate on whatsoever things are true, lovely, noble, and godlike. To meditate is to eat all these truths, to cogitate, to give your attention to something, to focus on something. The shepherd in the Bible is a symbol of the guiding, healing, protective power of the divine presence within you. You're a good shepherd when you know and believe that God, or the supreme intelligence, is the only presence and power, cause and substance within you. Close your eyes. Become still and quiet, and gently affirm that the wisdom of God anoints your intellect and is always a lamp unto your feet. It's always a light upon your path. Look to the infinite presence at all times and think, speak, act, and react from the standpoint of the divine center within you. Realize, know, feel, and claim that infinite spirit is your guide, your counselor, your boss, your senior partner, and that divine right action governs you at all times. If you're afraid of death, of afterlife, of judgment, and things of that nature, then you are being governed by ignorance and delusion and by false beliefs of all kinds. For God has not given us the spirit of fear, but of power and of love and of a sound mind. Death in biblical language is ignorance of the truth. That's the only death there is. The tabernacle of God is with humankind. He will dwell with them. They shall be His people, and God Himself shall be with them and be their God. You are now rooted in the divine. You are at home with God. He gives you rest and security. You are relaxed, at peace, completely free from fear. For wherever you are, God is, and you dwell with God forever. You know, it's amazing when I was reading this, thinking back to the beginning of the podcast, and maybe for about 30 or 40 episodes, I did not say the word God. I avoided the word God. It's so amazing how over, 700 episodes now, or 650, that we say that word all the time now. Part of my point in doing that at the beginning is I didn't want to push anybody away. The constant discussion of God. But ultimately, there is some sort of intelligence that is beyond us that we are accessing. Perhaps the word God can be a trigger word. This discussion of this beautiful phrase in the Bible does not have to be biblical. You can ignore it completely, but the teachings within it are very powerful. What you focus on, you get. And if you focus on things of truth, of love, of joy, then you get that thing coming to you. Your cup will runneth over. So it's a lesson in how to think properly and how to let go. It's a way of understanding how to think that Psalm 23 is so powerful. He does another chapter on Psalm 91, which we may address as well. But I really enjoyed this. I believe a lot of this was very poignant and powerful. I don't know where you're at in your spiritual journey, but all of these are universal truths that you can overcome your fear by letting go and accepting that there's the living presence, this thing, this spark within you. You can call it whatever you want, but it is very powerful. Once you start to utilize this, you can bring in great power all around you, and you focus on truths such as love and joy. You'll get more of that in your life. So I'd love to get your impressions of Dr. Joseph Murphy's teachings on the 23rd Psalm. And I may do an episode just reading some of the Psalms. They are magic spells. I have found some different books that actually say ways to read the Psalms. You light certain candles and you focus on certain things. They have unique power and they're in the Bible as sort of magic spell. In any case, what is your favorite Psalm? I'd love for you to tell me what your favorite Psalm is. Put it in the comments. Put a like on this video. People need to have this understanding and knowledge. It will help them, this connection to the divine, infinite intelligence all around us. In any case, all episodes of The Reality Revolution can be found at therealityrevolution.com. And welcome to The Reality Revolution.